Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we talk about topics related to fundraising, leadership, coaching, and management for professionals in the nonprofit world. I'm Margaret Katz-Kann, and I'm here today with my partner, David Langiuli.
Hey, Margaret. Welcome, 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 everyone, to the podcast. Margaret, we're joined by a lovely guest, Mina Das, today. Mina and I met on LinkedIn. She was stalking me. She was a stalker on LinkedIn. And she was very, it's kind of appropriate to the article that she wrote for us on the Fundraising Leadership blog post. She took initiative. She likes some of the work we do in the blog and the podcast. And so when I reached, I sort of announced that we were looking for guests this year, she kind of raised her hand and said, yeah, I'll come on your podcast. And Mina is a fundraising analytics consultant. She lives, if I'm not mistaken, up in lovely Vancouver, Canada, just moved up there. And she wrote a wonderful article for us on how to diversify your personal brand. And welcome to the podcast, Mina.
Thank you, David, and thank you, Margaret. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of curious. I'm curious about what we kind of talked, I think it was back towards the end of the year, about diversity, and you and I talked about, like, how do you diversify your leadership style? Like, because there's a lot of talk about, you know, what you look like on the outside as a form of diversity, which is well and good and important. And we started this conversation about, like, what's on the inside. So why don't you say a little bit about what you wrote about?
Of course. I want to go back to where you started about that wonderful stocking piece. Yes,
yeah.
I saw that post and I thought I need to jump on that. And that is what kind of motivated me to write this piece. Being in the pandemic and being, you know, doing your work just from the screens and talking to people, it is hard to find a connection to your work without that people aspect, without that, you know, looking at someone or walking with someone. And I think around March, I needed something to feel more closer to my work. And so this is what I started with, like reaching out to people in things that I might not be comfortable or I would have to learn. I mean, especially for this podcast, I need to understand some of the rules to be here. This is not my usual Zoom calls. So I decided I want to do that and reach out. And that is what the article is about. How to building a personal brand is kind of knowing more about yourself and finding out what more can you do? What is your potential? And through these kind of personal branding steps that I have mentioned in my article, I am now a little bit of a fundraiser. I am a little bit of an events coordinator. I'm a little bit of an analytics consultant, and I'm wearing these multiple hats. That's all the article about.
Yeah. Mina, I'm super curious, and I hear you talking about some of your edges professionally, but in the article you talk about imposter syndrome, and I'd love for you just, you know, I think that's a term, even if people haven't heard it before, they hear it and they're like, oh, right? Like they kind of know what it means, but I'd love for you to talk about that a little, if you would, and talk about what are some of the edges that that's created for you.
Of course. And so I moved to nonprofit industry about three and a half years back from the tech industry. I was working for Microsoft and Amazon back in Seattle when I was in the U.S. And I moved to nonprofit industry and my terms and terminologies changed. Suddenly there was major gifts and annual giving and campaigns and public fees and, you know, completely different than what I was used to hearing throughout my career of 4 or 5 years before then. I was coming with this data experience, but I needed still the fundraising portion in my title of fundraising analytics consultant. So I decided that with this kind of the approaches that I have mentioned in the article, that helps me to feel more confident in the work. When I talk to people, different people on LinkedIn or through my internal collaboration efforts, I get to hear from people what they do in their day-to-day work. So when I moved to this industry, there was this huge imposter syndrome. And I would say, to be honest, I still have that every day a little bit when I see someone's amazing post and I feel like, oh my God, am I doing enough? And am I on the right track? Am I doing okay? But it is part of the process. It's a journey to continuously talk to people, learn, implement, adapt, and then again, talk to people. It's kind of a cycle that goes on. And those five steps helped me to feel a little bit more confident. So one of the things that I do want to mention is I did write reaching out to people and talking to them. And this is my way of reaching out to people. I don't reach out only to the analytics people or the data people. I reach out to people who are completely doing something different in fundraising. I literally search for the term fundraising and I find out what is their role and what do they do. So that kind of helps, that curiosity helps me to tackle the imposter syndrome that I have on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's something, the imposter is a way we judge ourselves, like especially if we're up to something new. And I'm sort of in like the fourth 10-year arc of something new in my professional life. So it can always feel very uncomfortable to start anew, start again, begin again in a new profession, in a new, 5 years ago, I started training jiu-jitsu. I felt like a complete imposter. So it goes beyond just the discomfort. There is always discomfort when you're starting something new. But I think what you're suggesting is we kind of judge when the imposter pokes his head up, it's like, oh, you don't belong here. You know, you don't fit. You're not going to make it. You know, you're a stranger in a strange land. Is that kind of more of it?
That does resonate. You know, I come from India. I moved to North America 5 years ago. And coming into a different culture and a different country, it did feel like as an immigrant, like, okay, I need to stop. And do I need to, and this is something I like to phrase it how, do I want to be fitting in and sound like everyone else and be like more everyone else to be heard? Or do I want to stand out? And answer mostly usually was my head would say stand out and my heart would like fit in and make more friends. I think that where I want to be in which camp doesn't matter as long as I have this authentic relationship with myself. I know what I'm capable of. I know what I'm doing. I know who I'm talking to. I feel more grounded into understanding others, where they are coming from. And I think respecting everyone, my own foundation, that is what helps to, you know, to cut through that imposter syndrome or to cut through that questioning yourself mode, because that's going to be there no matter which country you live in or where we are coming from or where we are going to. But to tackle that, we need to have a strong relationship with our own selves.
Yeah.
I love that. What I love about that is it's almost like when you feel the imposter syndrome rising, it's almost like an invitation to say like, okay, I'm focusing out there too much, right? There isn't a right answer to how to negotiate that. And all I can do is to come in and say, here's what I need to know, you know, but that it comes from inside instead of outside.
Yeah. And yeah. Since our podcast is for leaders, there's kind of a bit of a misnomer with our brand, Fundraising Leadership. A lot of people think it's purely about fundraising, and sometimes it is, but more often than not, we are focused on the leadership aspects of what folks do in the nonprofit world, including fundraising. And in the training that Margaret and I have experienced, it always starts from leading from self. So just to accentuate what you're saying, you have to start with yourself first. And then you shift to leading with and from others, which is also some of what you talked about in your article, which is to start reaching out and interacting with other people. So why don't you share with us a little bit, like what you recommend in that regard in the article?
With terms of the leadership, I feel like I mentor a lot of immigrants, and I would say I want to be in a more leadership role than I am in currently right now. And in that whole phase of learning, you realize that, well, leadership is not just something that you always have to learn or acquire or adapt. A lot of things already exist in our own stories. So every time I'm doing these mentoring activities, or I am, you know, just assessing myself, which I usually like to do, where I'm going towards, I tend to look into my own story. Where am I coming from? Where was I 10 years back? Or what did I learn throughout my life? Because I feel like all of us have great power in our own stories. Like the questions that we are facing in our own lives have some answers already in the things that I have done in the past, in the things that I already know. All I need to know is connect the dots. So I'm never starting from scratch. I'm literally building something on top of each other. So giving an example of this leadership piece, so 2 years back in Canva company, I wanted to, you know, be more vocal about my skills around surveys, and I picked it up. That became part of my job description. I kind of started to manage that whole process, and I realized that the fundraisers around me, I could provide some kind of a thought leadership thesis or some kind of a conversation where this could be elevated. These survey skills could be elevated. It's more than just asking a question. It's also about where do we want to see the change come from in a survey. It's a bigger piece than just asking questions. And so I started to do a very methodical, okay, this is brown bag lunches. This is some 30-minute conversations. This is some kind of a group thing. And there was this mix and match that not just helped me to establish my who I am or where I'm coming from for my job description portions, but also helped them get to a place that I wanted them. So one of the things that I talked about in the article is building these thought leadership pieces or sharing your skills within your firm. That establishes those leadership aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And what I love is the sense of connection that you talk about creating too with your team members. You know, not only do I have a good idea, but like if we all use this together, it's going to make us better as a team. And you wrote about it. I'm super curious because it's in so many conversations, you know, of teams who are now working from home. How do we stay connected? How do we keep those relationships, you know, feeling like we have money in the bank in our relationships? And what are you seeing that's working?
Okay, Margaret, here is what I'm going to say would sound everything opposite to that I feel like I usually read. So I'm one of those people who opens her Zoom cameras and kind of shares a little bit of her background. I sit as I am in my home, a day-to-day basis. This is kind of my way of welcoming someone. Thanks, David. Oh, thanks, both of you guys. Welcoming someone into my space. That's kind of my way to give a virtual hug. I'm one of the hugger person. So, you know, I would see a person, I would, you know, throw myself and ask them, how are you? And I couldn't do that in the virtual environment. So I started to share myself as I am, whether I'm happy or sad, whatever be my hair, whatever be my space, and feel, you know, come from there and tell them that this is where I'm meeting you. And eventually the people I talk to, they feel comfortable to share about themselves. When it comes to work, I feel like I tend to do more of less video, more just phone call, and then get to the work. And then when it comes to one-on-one conversations, I want to see someone. I want to see someone smile. I want to see someone talk. So with these leadership activities that I mentioned in the articles, I use a kind of a mix and match approach of where the person is. If I'm doing it as a mentorship activities, I would probably do it on a Zoom call, give them the confidence of, you know, my body language, which I can transmit through the Zoom call, like my hands, folded hands, or, you know, a smile. A lot of things goes into those virtual conversations that can make someone feel comfortable to share and meet me halfway.
Yeah, I think there's also something about, I don't know if you really mentioned this in the article, but it's just coming up for me as we're talking now. There is something about consistency and with relationships, even during the pandemic. What I mean by that is, let's say as we start to, you know, we sort of have our close-in relationships, our children, our spouses, the people we live with, pets, and so forth. And then we start to radiate out. And this is what leaders do. They radiate out their relationships. And I think about Margaret and Janice and Michelle. You know, we meet twice a week. And we just keep leaning into each other, whatever's happening. You know, it's like the consistency in the conversations and a pace to them. You know, a lot of leaders are reluctant to take meetings now on Zoom or by phone because there's so many meetings. Zoom fatigue. And I was just having breakfast with a CEO, somebody that Margaret and I work with. And he actually just started, this guy's the CEO of a company. He just started, you know, doing a weekly staff meeting. And I was like, good. I mean, we need that. You need this in a pandemic. You know, like, people think they need less meetings, but actually, as human beings, we need this interaction. Yes, we need time on our own. And so I'm wondering what you're finding in terms of this consistency, especially, you know, as you're starting to develop new relationships. I know you're starting to radiate out more and through LinkedIn and you're building your business. So what are you seeing?
Interesting question. And I'm trying to jog my memory because, so when I started to reach out, I think I started to invest in all of those 5 days of the articles right around March or April, because the pandemic kind of, you know, just hit me. My family lives really far. They live in India and I feel super anxious. How are they doing? And so these 5 days were kind of helping me to keep my brain into something more positive and more something that can be controlled. I would say the with a lot of meetings, and I have a ton of meetings every day as a consultant, and I tend to do the work things more off Zoom if possible. This is in terms of the consistency, I would say. I do the work things off Zoom because it helps me, one, to improve my audio skills, just to hear someone and understanding from there and focusing from there. Zoom fatigue takes me like twice, I would say, effort when you are on camera and then you are, you know, looking and taking that body language, also trying to mentally focus on your work and get the next steps and, you know, making sure that you have what you need for the next call. So I usually try to do audio calls if possible. But when it comes to like one-on-one check-ins of building those relationships and asking someone how they are, if they are okay, and if they're interested, I try to do that over the Zoom. And I would say there were times when I just did not have the energy. There were days when I did not want to do any conversation with known or unknown people. And I'm sure I share this with a lot of people. But like I said, it that consistency comes when you open a Zoom call and then you share your space yourself mentally and physically in a way where you say, okay, this is where I am at and I need help with this. Or this is where I'm usually in, I'm not in the best place. So it comes with where you are and telling that you know, authentically, honestly, without the Zoom thing, before pandemic, one common feature was we were so put together, so professional in front of each other. Like, you know, we were in our best shoes. Now we are in a place where we can be, you know, where we can be anything, kind of working from home.
Nobody's psychedelic pink hoodie.
Yeah.
No, no, psychedelic pink hoodie.
Oh, Mina, you gotta go there.
I took that as a mental note. I'm gonna do that because awesome. I would love to see that.
Well, Margaret was just a guest on the nonprofit MBA podcast, and she wore her psychedelic pink hoodie.
I did. And I want to say yes, because I was apparently the first guest where it's video in addition to audio. So
you set the bar really high, Margaret.
I set the bar so high. Yeah. And I was clearly not wearing shoes because I haven't worn shoes since last March, but you know.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, Mina, I'm curious, and I'm totally switching topics a little bit here, but you talked a lot about online networking, and tell a story. Like, well,
AKA
you have one
stalking. Hello.
You've told a story. So David is a fan of LinkedIn. I'm still like, oh, I don't want to spend that much time. So
you totally are like resisting LinkedIn.
So resistant to LinkedIn. So Mina, tell me something that's worked for you about LinkedIn, and I will put it in my evidence of why I should do it more.
Take you off the 16-step ladder of resistance. It'll take you down one notch.
You gotta start somewhere, David.
Exactly.
I think I started with before pandemic, I never had a full complete LinkedIn profile. And after I decided I want to reach out to people, where I started was keeping my profile updated. That sounds like really basic, but that is the first place where I feel like it's my virtual home, where someone who doesn't know me, that's where they are going to go to meet me. So keeping the profile updated, starting with my hardest section to complete in my LinkedIn profile was about me. Like, where do I start? How do I make it sound professional? How do I make it sound like if someone from my current job or someone in my future job comes to my profile, it looks, you know, really polished. And I thought, throw everything out of the window. I'm not making it a Facebook website, page, but still I want to make it about me, who I am, my personality on the profile. So I may be about me like I usually talk, in a way that, you know, point-wise, in a way I talk, I like eating. You would hear a reference of ice cream on my profile. Starting from there, I started to reach out to people, and there were many, many amazing people who said, yes, I would love to have a coffee. Yes, I would meet for 30 minutes. And some of those conversations turned into, you know, I would go and meet their class as a alumni, or I would go and teach a trick or two about analytics, or someone invited me for their webinar and gave me a pass to attend their session. I don't want to make it sound like it's about some of those goodies that come after the calls, but it definitely in those 30 minutes, I think something that I have realized over consistently doing so many coffee chats is I learned better to understand where I need to talk my story. Like, from which point should I talk? Should I be speaking from when I moved to North America? Should I be starting from right this day, or should I be talking about pandemic? So I have seen other people struggle with this too, and that helps me to know people who are out there, you know, feeling the same things and navigating their jobs. So that's kind of my successful story of reaching out to people and making friendships. Also, if you want me to help you complete the profile, I would love to do that, Margaret, just in case.
Are you telling me my profile's not completed? It's possible.
No, I want that pink hoodie video. I'm going
your
to
imposter, your imposter is saying that maybe it's not complete, Margaret.
I know. I'm freaking out here. No. Mina,
well,
you've given us.
Yeah, I like what you're saying, Mina. There is a certain what I've noticed is engaging, being requires a certain openness on LinkedIn. And so I can't remember exactly. I know I had put something out in the fall about podcast guests, and you reached out to me, and I was just open to, like, I was open to having the conversation. I got introduced to a CEO of a company in the DC area recently, and we kind of got on a video call together. Now, this would normally be outside our general interest in the work we do in the nonprofit world, but he happens to serve on a few boards of nonprofits. So it turned out to be a very interesting conversation. I think you have to go in with like a beginner's mindset to some of this. Like I got on the call with this gentleman and I heard his accent, and I asked him where he's from, and he said he was from Ireland originally. And then I proceeded to tell him how, you know, my wife and I went on, because we're both half Irish, we went on our honeymoon to Ireland, and we got to talking, and he's from the west coast of Ireland. So we got to talking about Ireland, and we spent quite a bit of the conversation just talking about Ireland, which is great. I mean, it brought back all kinds of memories, and I told him stories, and we had a great conversation, you know? So you just have to be open. Yeah.
I especially like the part where you said being open and going with the beginner's mindset. That's exactly what I did. I think throughout the pandemic, we have been hearing that your self-care ways that you are picking up should prioritize you, should prioritize yourself. And I think people are kind of getting into the habit of understanding what time needs to be scheduled where. Do I really need to have this meeting? They're trying to prioritize. But one of the things that went into these conversations or online conversations or coffee chats was I started to let go of my expectations, that, you know, these huge expectations that a 30-minute coffee chat should give. Like, I should have something that I can take away from the conversation to do the next step. I need nothing out of the conversation necessarily out of a 30-minute, except that those 30 minutes should be well spent understanding someone, knowing someone, hearing maybe one happy thought they had in the last 2 days or one challenge they are having in the next 1 hour or last 1 hour, literally nothing taking out. And that helped me to build those relationships and conversations.
Nice.
Something
so I think you're, go ahead.
Margaret. Oh, I just, I'm thinking about, you know, one of the things during the pandemic is that I've noticed it's the end of sort of organic meeting people, you know, like we don't go over to somebody's dinner party and meet a new friend or, and so what you're doing is actually a really neat way to rethink that. Maybe there is a way to organically connect with people that we don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we normally like to finish our podcasts with a call to action with something, you know, that you can offer, Mina, for our listeners to try or to put into action. So what would you offer?
I would offer a challenge. I would offer the listeners one challenge, how I started. So I would love them to go out and find some way to carve out some time in their Fridays. I started with 2 hours every Friday. That's a huge amount of time. Stick 30 minutes, whatever works out for the schedule. It doesn't have to be 2 hours. But I challenge that find some time on Fridays, go out and send like 5 to 10 people just some message from their first connections on LinkedIn and ask if they would be willing and interested to spend 30 minutes. And it could be anything about directly their work or something related in the field. Or, you know, if someone was part of your webinar that you were listening in the last 1 week, and maybe you want to share some ideas from the webinar. So pick a point, make some time on a Friday, and just talk for 30 minutes. Like I said, without expecting that you need next steps and 5 items to take from the conversation. So I challenge for that, and I want to hear more.
That's big. I'm hearing 2 hours. I heard
that's the challenge.
That's the challenge, folks. Spend 2 hours on Friday. Remember, we were talking with Mina before we got on the podcast, and we shared with her like a challenge should take your breath away. So she's challenging you to set aside 2 hours for conversations that go nowhere on Fridays.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah,
we want there to be a goal.
I hope when people are listening to this, they do gulp. But I want to add that when I say 2 hours, I don't mean like they have to take like literally 30 minutes for conversations in the 2 hours. But I try to keep a big window because I'm trying to be open to having conversations from different time zones. So when you are doing virtual, there are people who are coming from your ESC, ISC, MSC, and I don't know how many more T's are there out in the world, but there are so many T's. So keeping a broader window makes it easier for me to connect in their time zone.
Wonderful. Awesome. Mina, thank you so much for joining us today. We've loved talking with you. And this podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe if you haven't already. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music Podcasts, and Spotify. And if you are enjoying the show, please rate and review so others can find us. Now, go put this challenge out into practice. Curiosity.